The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles at first from the Harvard Health Letter, and this is the May 2022 issue of the Harvard Health Letter. The first article I'm going to read is called Reset Your Heart Health. Cardiac rehabilitation and cardiovascular wellness programs offer a second chance. Heart disease can take decades to develop, with years of poor lifestyle habits contributing to the problem. By the time damage shows up, it may seem like there's no way to reverse it. But a number of programs, typically offered in group sessions in an outpatient hospital or community setting, can help you to change unhealthy habits, reduce your heart attack risk, and boost your longevity. Here's a look at some of the available programs. The first one is cardiac rehabilitation. Cardiac rehabilitation, also called rehab, is a medically supervised 3-month program for people who have had a heart attack, heart bypass surgery, a heart or a heart and lung transplant, stenting to open arteries, or valve surgery, as well as those with chronic chest pain, also called angina, or certain types of heart failure. A team of doctors and other experts assess participants' health needs and develop individualized treatment programs that focus on exercise, a heart-healthy diet, weight control, stress reduction, sleep, and medication adherence. Groups meet for education and training several times per week for 3 months. We give you the tools to make a lasting change. For instance, we work with you to overcome barriers like how to cope with arthritis that's keeping you from exercising, says Dr. Romit Bhattacharya, a preventive cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Experts also guide participants' progress and monitor their exercise sessions. You have an exercise physiologist there with you, so you learn what it feels like when you're safely pushing the limits and when you should pull back. That helps to address the fear element about whether you're overdoing it, Dr. Bhattacharya says. It also adds up to proven benefits. Evidence suggests that people who attend cardiac rehab reduce their risk of heart attack by 31%, and that people who complete all 36 sessions, usually over 3 months, reduce the risk of death by 47% compared with those who only complete one session. Cardiac rehab also improves overall physical function and reduces chest pain. Cardiovascular wellness programs are for people who don't qualify for cardiac rehab but want to improve their heart and blood vessel health. They're offered at hospitals, academic centers, private doctor practices, fitness centers, and even community centers. These programs vary greatly in their approaches, expertise, topics, and length. Some are just like cardiac rehab with a team of health professionals who provide months of health monitoring and training. An example of that is MGH's, that's Massachusetts General Hospital's, Cardiac Lifestyle Program. It's intended for people who have an abnormal heart rhythm, certain kinds of heart failure, obesity, diabetes, or at least one heart disease risk factor, like an elevated weight, blood sugar, cholesterol, or blood pressure. Other programs are open to anyone and have just one or two experts who focus on a few areas of health. These programs may last for a couple of weeks or even just one session. The costs vary by program and provider. With qualifying conditions, insurance, including Medicare, covers the cost of cardiac rehab, and a similarly classified program called the Ornish Reversal Program, that's O-R-N-I-S-H, offered at certified hospitals and clinics across the country. Depending on the provider, the Ornish program is also open to anyone who wants to improve cardiovascular health and is willing to pay for it out of pocket, but it costs from $7,000 to $10,000. Other programs like MGH's Cardiac Lifestyle Program are partially covered by insurance, and some others are free or have a minimal charge. Be sure to know up front what services are being offered by the program, how much it costs, how many experts are involved, and how often and where your group is going to meet. Despite the benefits of cardiac rehab programs, many people don't use them. Only 10 to 34% of people who qualify participate in cardiac rehab, Dr. Bhattacharya says. It's often because of the diagnosis. Only 10% of people with heart failure are referred to the program, and less than 3% attend. Prevention is something that doesn't get as much of a spotlight as it should. Other barriers can include transportation issues, fear of being too unfit to take part, and unconscious bias in referrals. Women, minorities, and people with limited English language skills are less likely to be referred, Dr. Bhattacharya says. He stresses that we need to change this thinking. These programs are not yet democratized and made available to as many people as they should, Dr. Bhattacharya notes, but it could be that everyone would benefit from a group-based program to live the healthiest life that they can. Next, we're going to look at the subject of home screening options for colorectal cancer. And before we talk about this, I think it's really important to emphasize that the gold standard in colorectal cancer screening is colonoscopy. The most comprehensive colorectal cancer screening is a colonoscopy, a procedure that enables the doctor to examine the inside of your colon and snip out suspicious growths. Before the procedure, you drink liquids that help you clean out your colon so the doctor can see everything. The doctor then passes a long, flexible tube into your colon. The tube carries a tiny video camera and surgical instruments. The process is lengthy and can be unpleasant, but it's worth it. Colonoscopy is the most sensitive test available for identifying colon cancer, and it detects 95% of cancers. When you remove a precancerous polyp, you're preventing a future cancer, says gastroenterologist and Harvard Medical School professor Dr. Lawrence Friedman. A screening colonoscopy is recommended at age 45 and every 10 years thereafter if no polyps are found, until age 75. It's recommended at a younger age or more frequently if there's an increased risk of colon cancer. And of course, if polyps are found, then the colonoscopies are done more frequently as well. The article we're going to talk about is entitled Home Screening Options for Colorectal Cancer. Tests are quick and easy without any prep required, but the tests aren't for everyone. Among the many things the pandemic has taught us is that we can do more from home when it comes to our medical care, whether it's getting a checkup by a video or phone call, or sending blood pressure measurements to doctors electronically. For some people, It's also meant trying an at-home screening test for colorectal cancer. These tests have been approved for years, but are often passed over in favor of colonoscopies. Now, however, there's a huge backlog of colonoscopies because so many people had to cancel their appointments during the pandemic. We'll never catch up with all the colonoscopies that have to be done. So for people at average risk of colorectal cancer, it's reasonable to use an alternative screening method, says gastroenterologist Dr. Lawrence Friedman, a Harvard Medical School professor, and the Anton R. Fried, MD, chair in the Department of Medicine at Newton Wellesley Hospital. On the other hand, people who have symptoms that could be caused by colorectal cancer or who are at increased risk for it because colorectal cancer runs in their family or because they have inflammatory bowel disease should still have a regular colonoscopy and not a home screening test. An at-home screening test is a kit that allows you to collect a stool sample in the privacy of your home. It's quick and easy and requires no bowel preparation. The stool sample is sent to your doctor's office or a lab. There, it's analyzed for signs of colorectal cancer, like microscopic amounts of blood, which can come from tumors, precancerous growths called polyps, or DNA from cancer cells. Basically, there are three types of at-home screening tests that are recommended by the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. The first is doing a guaiac fecal occult blood test called GFOBT, which uses chemicals to find blood in the stool. This test should be done once a year. This is the regular card test for blood that your doctor might do in the office. The second test is called a fecal immunochemical test. It uses antibodies to detect blood in the stool, and it must be done once a year too. A third test is Cologuard. This is a test you've probably seen advertised on television. It is a multi-target stool DNA or MTS DNA test, also known as a FIT DNA test, that can identify DNA from cancer cells in the stool and has a FIT component to look for blood. In other words, the test is screening for both DNA from cancer cells and abnormal amounts of blood in the stool. The Cologuard test should be done every 3 years. Your doctor typically prescribes an at-home screening test, and Medicare pays for it if you don't have any symptoms of colorectal cancer. People who don't have a doctor can go online and order a FIT DNA test at www.cologuard.com. That's www.cologuard.com. And the test maker will arrange for a telemedicine visit with the physician, who will evaluate you and then can prescribe the test. But you'll probably have to pay for the telemedicine visit. You can buy some stool guaiac tests or FIT tests online and over the counter for $10 to $25. These tests may not be as accurate as the kinds prescribed by a physician. In any case, you should discuss your test results with a doctor. At-home screening tests differ in their ability to detect colorectal cancer. The FIT DNA test is the most sensitive. Remember, the FIT DNA test is one that is also called Cologuard. It finds cancer when present 92% of the time. FIT tests, that means the test for antibodies to detect blood in the stool, finds cancer 80 to 82% of the time. The stool guaiac test, remember that's the one that the doctor does with the green card in the office, identifies colon cancers only 20 to 50% of the time. And so that test is really not routinely recommended anymore unless people refuse to do any other test. Keep in mind that sometimes at-home tests are falsely positive, responding to bleeding from other types of polyps or abnormalities in blood vessels. This can happen 14% of the time in the FIT-DNA test and about 5% of the time with regular FIT tests. So in other words, if you do the Cologuard test about 14% of the time, it will be falsely positive. It will tell you that you have a colon cancer when you don't. Of course, the response to this is to have a colonoscopy. If you have a positive at-home test result, you will be referred to a gastroenterologist for a colonoscopy to locate and remove tumors or precancerous polyps. If you have a negative at-home test, you should, as always, continue to watch for potential signs of colon cancer, like a feeling that the bowel isn't emptying completely, blood in the stool, stools that are narrower than usual, frequently feeling full or bloated, and weight loss with no known cause. If you develop any of those symptoms, you may need a colonoscopy for evaluation. If you don't have any symptoms and you're at average risk for colorectal cancer, you'll still need to keep up with at-home testing every 1 to 3 years. Colorectal cancer can be cured if it is caught early with a screening test, but don't put off a screening because you're not sure which one to get. As Dr. Friedman puts it, the best screening test is the one that gets done. I'd like to just take a moment to once again reemphasize that the colonoscopy is the gold standard in colorectal cancer screening. Nowadays, colonoscopies are done under anesthesia almost always, and therefore are not uncomfortable. The only way to be sure whether you have precancerous polyps or colon cancer is to have a colonoscopy when it is recommended. Now we're going to turn to some news briefs. Again, this is from the Harvard Health Letter of May 2022. The first one is called Light Meals Are Linked to Overeating. Sticking to reasonable portion sizes is an important way to control your weight, but it's easy to trick yourself into thinking it's okay to take a few extra bites. An example comes from a study published online January 15, 2022 by the journal Appetite. I have to admit, that's a journal I'm not familiar with, Appetite. Scientists gave 37 people identical servings of pasta salad on two different occasions. On one occasion, the meal was labeled light. On another, it was called filling. People eating the light meal ate a little more and said they felt less full than people eating the filling meal. Study authors say the findings indicate that expectations about how full you feel after eating can influence your actual food intake, and that you should use caution if you're buying foods that are marketed as light to lose weight. Another news brief is new numbers about statin drug intolerance. It's said that half of all people who try a statin drug to lower cholesterol wind up abandoning the medication because of real or perceived side effects, often muscle aches. But don't give up too quickly if you suspect you can't tolerate the drug, because the real prevalence of statin intolerance is much lower than 50%, according to a study published online February 16, 2022, by the European Heart Journal. Researchers pooled the results of 176 trials that included more than 4.1 million statin users around the world, followed for 12 to 19 months. The overall prevalence of true statin intolerance was no more than 6 to 10%. Factors that increased the likelihood of being statin intolerant included being Black, Asian, female, or older, having diabetes, liver, or kidney disease, or an underactive thyroid, taking certain heart medications, or drinking alcohol. Study authors urge that if you think you might be experiencing statin side effects, be sure to work with your doctor to alleviate the symptoms before giving up on the therapy. If the symptoms really are due to your statin, changing the type of statin or the dose may eliminate the symptoms. Exercising or taking coenzyme Q10 may help. Don't give up too early on statins. They've saved a lot of lives. And be sure to talk to your doctor before you make the decision of stopping that medication. Now we're going to give you a short article that comes from the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2022, and it's entitled Smart Snack Strategies. If you're trying to improve your diet, between meal snacks can either help or hinder your efforts. Several simple strategies can keep you on track, whether you're trying to manage diabetes, ward off heart disease, or lose weight. The most important tip is to upgrade the quality of your snack choices. Many people favor starchy snacks like chips and bread, says Mark O'Meara, a dietitian at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Many of the veggie chips people believe are healthy are just potato chips with vegetable powder added for flavor and color, he notes. You're better off choosing more nutritious carbohydrate-based foods like fruit or whole grain crackers, and to balance them with a little bit of protein or healthy fat. Doing so will release your carbohydrate into your bloodstream slowly over a longer time. That gives your body more time to burn the calories, and you're also more likely to feel full and satisfied. When you eat low-quality carbs like candy or potato chips, you're often hungry again within an hour. You then end up eating more calories, which are then stored as fat, foiling your attempts to lose weight and control your blood sugar, O'Meara explains. Snacks can help you to get the recommended 4 to 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day, a goal most Americans don't meet. But instead of having a whole apple or banana, have just half and pair it with a small handful of nuts, like unsalted almonds or peanuts. If you need a portable snack, all-natural bars made with dried fruit, nuts, and dark chocolate can be a good option. Look for brands made with whole foods, not highly processed products. By curbing hunger between meals, snacks may help to prevent overeating. When people get too hungry before dinner, they're often tempted to get quick but high-calorie takeout meals instead of spending the time to cook a healthy, homemade meal, says O'Meara. But sometimes people snack out of habit rather than hunger. Maybe you treat yourself to a cookie every day at 3 p.m. But there are probably days you aren't actually hungry because you had a filling lunch or skipped your workout. Before you grab a snack, ask yourself, am I really hungry or am I just following a routine? Many people snack after dinner, but if you eat a well-balanced dinner around 6 or 7 p.m., it takes about 4 hours for your body to digest that food. That means you shouldn't be hungry again before you go to bed at 10 or 11 p.m. Mindless snacking while watching television is very common, so try to watch less. Enjoy your favorite show, but once it's over, stop. Don't stay on the couch or your favorite chair. Move to another part of your house that's far away from the kitchen. Do another activity like reading or a hobby during which you won't be tempted to eat, O'Meara says. Another trick he recommends is that you can use any time of the day to sip a hot beverage instead of having a snack. A mug of herbal tea or decaf coffee fills you up and blunts your appetite. This may encourage weight loss, according to some research. What are some healthy snacks? Well, they include a half a cup of plain, low-fat Greek yogurt with fresh fruit or berries, a quarter cup of trail mix made with nuts or seeds, dried fruit, and dark chocolate, a quarter cup of hummus with a cup of fresh vegetables like baby carrots, broccoli florets, and cherry tomatoes, peanut, almond, or sunflower butter on sliced apple, pear, banana, or whole grain crackers. Low-fat cheese cubes, about the size of 3 or 4 dice in total, with an apple or a small bunch of grapes. Or half a cup of shelled edamame, which are fresh green soybeans sold shelled or in pods, usually in the freezer section. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.